Under the federal government's national cabinet's four-step plan to COVID normal, international travel can resume once 80% of eligible adults are fully vaccinated, and that's expected to be sometime later, probably late November, something like that. But the government is still working out how and where Australian citizens, permanent residents and travellers will be required to quarantine when they get home. Jane Holton is leading a second review into the effectiveness of Australia's quarantine arrangements. She's also the chair of CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. Jane Holton, welcome back to Breakfast.
Morning, Fran.
Australia will hit that 80% milestone, we think, in the next couple of months. By then, will we be ready to reopen our international borders?
Well, I think, Fran, personally, we're already, aren't we? We're very keen for this to happen. But there's a lot of work to do to make sure that we have the right settings, that we actually can continue to protect the community. Because, as you would understand, some people will be coming back to Australia from locations where there's still a lot of COVID around. And we have to do some work to work out how much risk there is in terms of locations. And then, of course, personal risk, depending on people's vaccination status.
Are you going to be looking specifically at home quarantine arrangements? We know South Australia's already trialled a home quarantine scheme or using a surveillance app. Is that what you're focused on?
Well, I'm focused on several things, Fran. Firstly, obviously, we want to just make sure that the current quarantine system is working well and to look to ensure that all the recommendations from last year have been implemented. And I'm pleased to say that actually the states and territories have really lifted their game on the existing quarantine system. So that's really good news. But we know that we will want a variety of kinds of quarantine going forward, and home quarantine. For those people who can quarantine at home, and I do think it's important to keep that in perspective, that won't be an option for everybody. But for many people, the possibility of quarantining at home will be real, and I think is something that we'll be looking to make pretty widely available. And as you say, we've already got people in home quarantine. Interestingly, in Tasmania right now, there are more people doing home quarantine than there are people doing hotel quarantine.
From overseas?
No, most of those are domestic travellers, Fran. But of course, some of those domestic travellers have come from places where there's a lot of COVID in the community. So the distinction becomes a little meaningless when you're talking about people travelling from places with COVID.
What does home quarantine look like in a successful scheme? Have you had a look at any yet? Is the one that's working in South Australia, what does that look like? Is it still 2 weeks, or is it 5 days, or is it enough days till you can get a positive test? What does it look like?
Well, it may be a number of different things. The first thing, and I would compliment the South Australian government for the work they've done, including developing a very good piece of technology. We're using lots of technology, Fran. This is an app which includes very specific geolocation, but also enables them to connect the person into health records and things of that sort. What we know from overseas is that in a number of countries, you may have to be isolated for a period waiting for a negative test, but it depends on your risk. And we also know that if you're double vaccinated, it may well be the case that you need a shorter period that you might have to isolate when you arrive, not necessarily 14 days. All of those things are on the table, but we need to make sure we've got the evidence, Fran, because as we know, what our health authorities are trying to do is trying to manage the risk in the community in order that we can keep pressure off hospitals and particularly ICUs. So a bit of work to go yet on all of those data points.
But as one listener's written in, why would it be necessary when people are vaccinated and COVID is in the community? I mean, once we reach 80%, we're going to be living with it in the community. If you're vaccinated, you know, why would you need any kind of quarantine for people coming, vaccinated people returning home?
Yep, and it's an important question. And as we know, the vaccines are unbelievably effective in preventing severe disease and death. In some instances, there is still a possibility, it's not a high proportion, but it's not insignificant, that people can still catch COVID. And we know that with Delta, people who catch COVID, even if they're vaccinated, they're carrying a high load of virus, which means they can transmit it. Now, as we know, the reopening plan has a number of stages which still contemplates public health actions to minimise the number of outbreaks and the spread. So I think there'll be different stages to this, Fran. And you're quite right. In 3 or 4 years' time, I'll be surprised if we're using these kinds of arrangements, unless, for example, there's a very nasty new variant.
In 3 or 4 years, did you say?
Well, we don't know how long it'll take us to have The kind of level of coverage of vaccines, but also the level of protection right across the community. But we know that the short term will see a significant reopening and, frankly, a lot more freedom. But we don't know how long those other stages will take.
How many months off do you think it is till we start home quarantining as the option, as the preferred option or available option for returning people? It's those 30,000 Australians who are stranded overseas, for instance.
Well, I'm hoping, Fran, that we can have systems up and running, certainly in test arrangements, well before Christmas. I mean, that's what everyone's working to, and I think that's the carrot, if you like. If we hit that 80% double vaccinated point, then we should be able to actually have these arrangements up and running. Now, also remember, though, Fran, people will have to have somewhere that they can quarantine safely, and we have to look at what those arrangements are. So if people don't have somewhere to go when they arrive, and I suspect that people will have to think a bit carefully about what that looks like to make sure the arrangements are going to be fit for purpose. But we're going to do all of that work, Fran, and I'd hope that those arrangements certainly, and the trials we're talking about, will be well underway in the next month or so.
So obviously if you're home quarantining, that's free. If you're hotel quarantining, that's around $3,000 at the moment. News.com reported on another option yesterday that you're apparently involved in as an advisor to a commercial group called Quarantine Services Australia, proposing to build a network of privately run quarantine sites around the country. Should quarantine be a private sector venture? Shouldn't this be a state regulated and state run issue?
Well, certainly that group who I've talked to, Fran, are keen to ensure that the private sector can get access to the labour that they need. We know that there are tens of thousands of, for example, agricultural workers that are needed in the country, and they're needed very soon to do things like, for example, deal with harvests. And we know that our national income relies on getting those harvests in and getting those products shipped to customers right around the world. So we need to make sure that the capacity to deliver that quarantine is available when it's needed. And we all know...
Shouldn't the federal government have done this? And wasn't that one of your recommendations of your first review last year, that the federal government build specific quarantine facilities?
Well, yes, that's true. And we have got, as you know, an expanded Howard Springs, and we also have now agreements with a couple of the states to actually build those facilities. But I think, Fran, when we're talking about up to, say, for example, 30,000 agricultural workers, I mean, that's a really big effort. So I applaud the private sector. I mean, they will have to run these kinds of services to the satisfaction of the relevant authorities, and they will have to be done consistent with these national policies. No one's suggesting that they get a free pass. But I do think being creative at a time like this, so our economy can do what it needs to do while protecting people, that's really important.
And the state governments that have already stepped up because the federal government didn't and committed to building dedicated quarantine facilities, Victoria, Queensland, for two of them. Does this undercut the viability of that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, the reality is we always need, and I'm a big fan of having a capacity which is available at short notice, and those kinds of services will not meet the total need for this imported labour force. And we know that we rely on our friends in the Pacific, for example, for harvest reasons, and we need a lot of them in now. So 500 beds on its own, Fran, isn't going to meet the need for 30,000 workers.
How would a private-run quarantine facility operate? Does the traveller bear the cost if it's an imported migrant workforce? Does the farmer bear the cost, or who bears the cost of this, and how much would it cost?
Well, that I can't answer. You'd have to talk to the group who are proposing to do that. But I mean,
you'd want to make sure there's not equity issues there, isn't it? That there's a private facility that rich people can afford to go and get straight into, but the rest of those 30,000 Australians who can't afford to pay double whatever it might be have to sit and wait for a gap in the hotel quarantine system.
Yeah, that's true, Fran. And I would certainly hope that for returning Australians, we can find other ways to bring them back and bring them back soon. But if you think about it, we need to do two things. We need to look after those returning Australians, and governments have a vital interest in doing that. We also have to keep people's jobs going. We have to actually have the income that we get from exports. So we do also have to look after our farmers, our miners, our IT workers. We struggle at the moment to get high-skilled people in IT. So I think we can do both of these things, Fran, and I think that's the world we're looking at. This is a much more complicated world when all this started. We need to do both things, look after both our citizens, but also people who actually run businesses.
And in terms of the global effort and your work there with CEPI and the COVAX initiative, you're co-chair of the COVAX initiative, a special envoy of the WHO is urging Western countries to hold back on booster doses until developing countries catch up. And that's a long way off. Only around 3%, between 3 and 5% of Africa's population is fully vaccinated. That compares with 54% in the US, 65% in the UK. And as you know, we're shooting for those sorts of figures. I mean, should we hit pause on any talk of boosters?
Well, this is a real question of global equity, Fran, but it's more than that. It's a question of actually self-protection. We know that while there are significant proportions of the world that remain unvaccinated, there is a significant risk of the rise of new variants. So this is in our interest as well. Now, I'm not suggesting that we don't consider boosting vaccines, particularly for people whose immune systems are very vulnerable.
Yeah, but what about general population? I mean, the UK is looking at general boosters. Israel's already done it.
Yeah, I know. And certainly globally, that's not something that CEPI or COVAX support, and it's certainly not something that the Director General of the World Health Organization support. Targeted use of vaccines to actually ensure all of the world is protected is what we support. Now, the good news, Fran, is we're rolling up the production levels. We're really significantly increasing production. So that, I hope, means this is not a several year exercise. And I've seen the predictions that suggest we won't get vaccines there until 2023. We're hoping that we can do that well before that, that date.
Jane Holton, thanks for joining us again.
Pleasure.
Jane Holton, who's leading the second review into the effectiveness of Australia's quarantine arrangements.